last night.
I need an entertaining man.
We were talking about you, babe. They said
you was involved in a robbery that was due to happen at a quarter to three in Main Street.
I didn't believe
them. I didn't believe them. I need an entertaining man.
But when the Crimson Dynamo finally assured me, well, I knew. Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, a radio show that always is championing the local comic book show.
Get it out.
And we're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station.
Thanks to us.
Thanks to us. And podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I'm Walter Dorelia.
And I'm
Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
Wait, you said that. You look like you're... I'm Walter Dorelia. And then I thought that was
I did. I fished off.
Mm-hmm. Fishtail. And I'm Chris Owen.
And you are some sort of professor.
Some sort of professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
At Hamilton's Mohawk College. Chris Owen is a learned man. And Chris joins me here every week to talk comics, talk the comic book industry, the world of comics. How comics touches you and your heart and your life.
Touches you.
There's a lawsuit right there.
Hey, well, how old were you, speaking of being touched, how old were you when you first started getting...
painful memories, Chris. you know what, let's not make light of that.
How old were you when you first started getting into comics? Do you remember the first comic you read?
I don't.
No?
I don't.
No? Like, so, roughly how old do you think you were? Roughly.
27?
Know. No, come on.
The joke was there, and I had to take it.
All right.
Probably around 8.
8, yeah.
Or 9.
Yeah.
9, maybe
yeah,
9.
Yeah, yeah.
8
yeah,
or 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Somewhere around there. Yourself?
Probably a little bit younger, but only because I had older brothers and sisters, and I was, you know, picking up them. I don't know if I was reading them, but I was picking up their comics, you know. I would say I was probably about the same age, maybe a little bit younger, like 7-ish.
Yeah, you English know. Kids are always quicker. You always start things earlier than us immigrants.
Do you remember if it was a superhero comic?
I think it was.
Yeah.
I think it was something like Spider-Man. I'm sure it was a Marvel. It might have been a that's not true. It might have been a Batman.
Yeah.
Might have been a Batman. For some reason, I'm starting to remember Batman.
Okay. Yeah. Mine was Richie Rich.
Richie Rich.
Richie Rich. Yeah.
You know what the funny thing about that, Chris, is?
What's that?
That, you know, in your and my interactions and discussions over the years and stuff, I know you have a soft spot for Richie Rich.
I do, yes.
There's been multiple times where you were looking out for a Richie Rich comic number one
or
Little Dot One, the first appearance of Richie Rich. And it's funny how that has swayed you now and you're collecting you.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And you know what's interesting is as long as we've known each other, I think we've only ever come across one Richie Rich comic.
Yeah, you're right.
One.
Yeah.
And that you owned probably close to 22 years ago, 20 years ago-ish.
You mean a number one.
Yeah.
But I've never owned a Little Dot number one.
No, I've never. I don't know if I've ever even seen a Little Dot number one.
Yeah, I don't. Honestly, I mean, obviously we've seen them in pictures and stuff, but I don't know. Yeah, at a show held one. Hey, can I see the Little Dot?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's odd, eh?
Yeah. Maybe that's the new trend coming up.
The Little Dot?
Little Dot, like...
Well, hey, you find one, and that has some great value.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Because what it does, it has, like, from a value point of view for comic books, it has a couple things that are key. One, it has absolute scarcity.
Yep.
But scarcity alone doesn't do it. I mean, you know, try to find a Lassie number two right now, and you're not going to have much luck.
No.
Problem is, there's no demand.
But who cares, right? Yeah.
Whereas that Little Dot number one has got massive demand.
Yeah.
Behind it too. Yeah. So,
but hey, that never.
If you do have one, bring it by Big B. I'll do a quick appraisal of it.
You'll get at least 10 cents on the dollar.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Listen. All right. Listen. We are here to talk about comic books, and of course, as all of our listeners know, that every week we go through a smattering of new comics this week, and this week is sponsored by...
Hey, Welcome back, Deleuze.
Deleuze.
VSOP Club Soda.
Nice.
The Club Soda of France. Try some today. What if you got Deleuze?
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, that's, I like their new catch line.
What if you got Deleuze? I like it.
Yeah, they rolled that one out.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Uh-huh. All right. Look.
All right, Chris.
So this week we're going to talk about a few books.
Uh-huh. What have you got? What have you got in store? So, Chris, this being Wednesday.
Yes.
You went up to your local comic book shop and you perused the New This Week shelf.
Correct.
And you just grabbed a smattering.
Just a smattering.
Of what's available.
That's right. Yeah.
Today.
Yeah. And now I know one of the books I didn't want to talk about, but because I talk about it every time it comes out,
uh-huh.
is Heroes in Crisis. That does come out today.
Right.
But we're not going to talk about it.
No.
But that's one of my favorite books right now, so... Yeah. A book that did come out today is, we got Shazam number 3.
Shazam!
Shazam! Now, Shazam, of course, this is obviously coming out because the Shazam movie's coming out soon, and they're trying to hype up the...
Have you seen trailers for that?
It looks terrible.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Oh, man.
Doesn't
it look
god-awful?
I get to a point where I'm almost speechless because it's just so... terrible to me.
Yeah.
What is DC thinking? Like,
I don't know.
They have a chance to do a really great movie here with Shazam. Uh-huh. And I'm not saying it needs to be dark and like all of the other DC movies. But man, this just looks weird.
The problem is this. They've got bitten in the butt with the seriousness of the Superman movies that just kind of have not resonated.
And, of course, the Batman movies.
Yeah, well, the Batmans have resonated.
Right, I see what you're saying,
But the Superman ones haven't resonated, and Shazam is more similar to Superman than he is Batman.
Right.
So they're going, oof, kind of a heavy-trodden Superman melancholy drama not working there.
Right, right.
So let's go... dumbass.
Let's go the opposite.
Yeah, let's go the opposite.
Yeah, it's the costume looks terrible. The whole, like, it looks like a lightness chest. Uh-huh.
Like Iron Man.
Yeah, but Iron Man would make sense to have a lightness chest.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, this is just supposed to be spandex.
I know.
It looks weird. Anyways.
Yeah, I know.
But hey, you know what? But Shazam. On your
number... Let's try to sell this comic now, Chris.
You know what?
Get people into the shop and pick up Shazam.
I will say this. When you look at the inside of this book, it actually looks pretty awesome. I gotta say, like, it's... The art is fantastic. And I don't say that about a lot of new books these days. But, well, if you just peruse that book quickly for me. You know, the art, it's full. It's exciting. There's a lot of movement to the artwork. I got to say, it actually looks very good.
Oh, Chris, this is a good-looking book.
Good-looking book.
It is really a nice-looking book. And you're right. The art in here is fantastic.
And there's a little mini story on the inside that has a different art style to it that looks cool as well, as if they're telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great-looking book. I highly recommend picking it up. Jeff Johns is doing the writing for it. Of course, he's always doing a great job writing pretty much everything he does. You know, so I do recommend this book.
Fantastic. Hey, Shazam number 3. Is at your local comic book shop today. Check it out.
All right. Next up, we've got Wonder Woman number 65. You're a wonder, Wonder Woman. We've got Wonder Woman 65. Now, the draw to this particular book is the variant cover, which is one of those virgin covers by Art Germ. Of course, stunning cover by Art Germ with Wonder Woman on the front there, painted style, digital type comic. Awesome cover, and the art on the inside by Jesus Marino is great, so you know what, you really can't go wrong on this one either.
Wow, that is a good looking book by Art Germ. Wonder Woman number 65, and that's at your local comic book shop today. Check that out.
Perfect. Next up on the Marvel Hit Parade, we've got Black Panther versus Deadpool. Now, it's interesting to me that, you know, Deadpool is really there. I'm pretty sick of Deadpool. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of it, and they've really, really...
Milked
this one. Uh-huh. Boy, have they ever. However, I think the idea of, you know, Deadpool and Wakanda and Deadpool versus Black Panther is a neat concept. So I'm gonna give this one a pass and say, yes, it's okay. It's not my style of book, but I do like the art, and I do think it's a neat-looking book.
Wow, Deadpool versus the Black Panther number 5. I mean, there are a lot of Deadpool fans, Chris, and there are a lot of Black Panther fans.
Right.
So in that sense, this book has a shot
in
terms of some sort of fan base that would be interested in it. I don't know. I haven't read the first four. I don't know. You know how sometimes two characters, they have that kind of synergy, that relationship, whatever.
Yep.
I don't know if...
Kind of like you and I.
Yeah, two characters.
Two characters.
I don't know if Black Panther and initially when the thought happened, did they go together?
I would say no.
One guy's kind of all stoic and quiet. Yeah. The other guy's all...
Like, all in your face.
I would rather see a fight between Deadpool and Spider-Man.
Well, they have that book already.
I know, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So right there, you can just see, okay, the zingers are going to be flying. Who's going to have the better ones and all that stuff? So I just don't know how this plays out. But
you know what? I'd like to see Deadpool versus the Hulk and just have the Hulk. It'd be like a one-page comic.
Right.
Anyways.
Yeah.
That was Deadpool versus, sorry, Black Panther versus Deadpool number 5.
It's at your local comic book shop.
All right. Fantastic Four, Legacy number 652, current number 7. This is a great book. You know, I got to say that Dan Slott has done a really good job of bringing the Fantastic Four back into the fold of the Marvel Universe. They, of course, for people that aren't in the know, Fantastic Four was gone for a long time, probably... due to, they say, you know, well, they're out in space doing some cosmic work and
blah, blah, blah. They were surveying.
Yeah. Sure. Creating new worlds. In reality, I'm sure there was some sort of political agenda because Fantastic Four was owned by Sony and not by Marvel.
Fox.
Yeah.
The cinematic rights.
So they could
didn't want to help them out by having them have a monthly comic.
Exactly. Yeah. But now they've got... Now that they're back, I really like the art by Aaron Cooter and John Lucas. Dan Slott's doing, as I said, doing a great job writing. And interestingly enough, you know what I also really liked is they're continuing on, and I didn't notice it in Black Panther, but I noticed it in this one. They're continuing on with Stan's soapbox in the pages of the current Marvel book. So they're choosing, every once in a while, they're going to choose a soapbox to add in to Stan, as an homage to Stan, I should say, for the current Marvel comics, so that kids, readers alike, adults, young and old, can actually take a look and see what may have been written back in the 1960s.
Right. Yeah, this one's from July 67. This is fantastic. I really like that a lot. Hey, you know what? Fantastic Four number 7 at your local comic book shop. A couple of things struck me about this. One is the Legacy 652. It's like Spidey's already well into the 800s.
Yeah.
It's just amazing what that did,
yeah,
that not printing them. And secondly, I don't know for future licensing. I don't know how important a monthly comic is. Here's the what we don't know type of thing. So the next time Fox or anybody enters a deal with any publisher for a property, say, hey, you know, we'll take this and we'll give you a certain amount of years
as long as we make
a certain amount of movies every 3 years or whatever. But from your end, you have to have a monthly title in print.
You got to keep publishing.
Yeah. You know, from your end, you owe us this.
Well, yeah, because it's marketing for them too, right?
So, That's what I'm saying. So like Marvel to actually not print FF as a industrial espionage sabotage type thing,
right?
Is weird. All right. Anyway, FF7 at your local comic book shop.
All right, and finally, the last last one I want to talk about here is because it's interesting that it's still going. I didn't realize that they're still doing this kind of stuff. But Barbie, first issue comes out today. Well, you know what? They've done Barbie comics before, but this is a new Barbie comic. But this is from the publisher of Paper Cuts. Now, interestingly enough, I'm going to take 2 seconds here, and I'm going to say that I can see here that the editor-in-chief of this publishing company of Paper Cuts is Jim Salicrup, who was a longtime Marvel guy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a guy that's edited Marvel comics for a long time, and now they're going back to doing tried and true properties like Barbie. So you know what? Great for them to do this, and certainly it's always good to have a variety of comic books out there for young and old, children of all ages, girls, boys, everything in between.
Nice. Hey, now you and I both know, Chris, I mean, comic books are our forte. I mean, we both have knowledge. You're pretty good at sports cards and
yep.
things like that. We both have knowledge of other collectibles. Old Barbies, they're worth a heck of a lot of money.
Old ones are worth a lot of money. Uh-huh. And the ones that were sort of the original...
like I would imagine the first Barbie, the first one, the 1967 or whatever.
Lots
and
of money.
The first Ken.
Yeah, lots of money.
69
sure.
or 70, whatever, yep. whenever they came out. I would imagine they'd be tons of money.
Well, you know what? I think that every time they kind of, because every once in a while they change the look of Barbie just a little bit.
Right.
I'm pretty sure those ones are worth money too.
Right, but,
And you know, every time you get there's, for a long time there was like, you know, Batgirl Barbie and Harley Quinn Barbie and all that kind of stuff.
Right, because after they became popular, they started licensing through like DC and Marvel and whoever. Like, so that's fantastic. Hey, Barbie number one, first collector's item issue is at your local comic book shop right now. Now, Chris has just given us a few, but trust me, there's so much more at your local comic book shop. You owe it to yourself to run in and check out the new this week.
All right, listen, let's have a quick musical interlude. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about things going on in the comic book industry. But first, how about a little bit of the old Spider-Man Krantz music?
Sweet sounds of Krantz. Love that.
Love it.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's a good one. That's
I
a good
like
one.
That one. Chris, brings us to the industry news part of the show. And industry news has continued to... No, industry news is sponsored by... You know, the club soda's hitting me.
You're
the
little,
bubbles are hitting
you know what?
Me
You're a little
extra.
Tired today. I know that. It's fine.
Duluth Club Soda, of course. Hey, Chris. What do you have when you... finish a bottle of Duluth VSOP club soda?
What do you have?
Well, you've got nothing to lose.
Ah, true. True. Good one. Good one.
Okay.
I'm trying to help you out.
I think their first one was better.
First one. You pushed it this time.
That's right. Yeah. Chris, let's talk about... what are we going to talk about? What are we
going to
talk about first?
I think we just need to talk about the Oscars.
The
Academy Awards.
The Academy Awards.
Were on the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Black Panther did well. Won 3 awards.
What did it win?
So it won Best Production Design.
Uh-huh.
So that's sort of like the overall look of how... You know, everything looks like the aesthetics. So, how does the overall look of Wakanda, the overall look of the inside of that casino, the overall look of all that stuff, right?
Okay.
That sort of that grand design kind of thing.
Right.
It won for that. It won for best costume design, mm-hmm. which I really thought it should.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, you know, it was up against a lot of those period piece type movies, and they tend to win.
Yeah,
you know, so like the ones from like the 1500s or whatever.
Yeah, but
and,
you know,
they tend to win.
Those ones, they wear those same dresses.
I know, but those ones are the ones. They're always the ones that win.
Yeah,
so I was very happy to see that. Yeah. You know, a movie
I remember way back in the 80s when Stallone had his success with Rocky.
Yeah.
And then Stallone, they were making a movie about unions in the 1930s.
Oh,
yeah. It was called Fist.
I remember that. Yeah.
And they wanted it all to be authentic. So this is like 1980, right? So they pretty well had to go back, let's say, 45 years for it to be, say, 1935.
Okay.
So what they wanted to do is they hunted down, they didn't want to do... how did you say, they didn't want to make the clothes
right
in the lab, the
right
little studio.
In the lab.
Whatever it is.
Production
thing. Yeah. They wanted to source and find old
real
clothes.
Oh, boy.
And I always remember the interview, and Stallone was adamant that the guys wear the underwear from the 30s as well. For authenticity.
But you know what?
So you can't have, you know, your cushy Fruit of the Looms.
Right, right.
You have to have those abrasive
pantaloons or whatever they
were. Whatever
they
were, right? Back from 1932 or whatever.
Right.
So I always found that that was my first glimpse of how anal the movie industry and actors and directors and everything are about authenticity of the piece.
Right.
When you say that most of those period pieces win, it's because
they're
meticulous to a fault.
Well, and I was just happy because usually with those period pieces, there's a lot of, and that's why I don't usually like them winning, is because there's so much reference material. Whereas something like Wakanda, they're making it all up. Granted, they're taking a lot of liberties from clothing and fashion designs that were already from Africa.
Mm-hmm. That's natural.
But that's natural, right? So why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I thought it was great that they actually won because, when you look at the costumes in that particular movie, I love all of them.
The thing I find interesting about costume design, especially futuristic, when you look at how, a sci-fi movie in 1955 will depict what people are wearing in 2100.
Right.
And then you
look
at one in 1970.
Yeah.
And then you look at one right now of a futuristic kind of African nation.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
That's awesome.
But what I find is they kind of date themselves relatively quickly.
Oh, for
like
sure.
Like
within
20 years, they're going, ooh,
yeah.
Man.
No one would ever wear that.
What the heck were they thinking, right?
Yeah. And you look at all those movies from the 1960s, those space movies, and they're all wearing those like space jumpsuits like that.
Space jumpsuits. The girls are all in mini skirts,
and there's like fishbowl helmets and all that stuff. Yeah.
Cool stuff.
So,
I'm glad Black Panther won. That's cool.
So won that one, and then the last one they won was Best Original Score.
Oh.
So that's like that orchestral kind of music.
Just like Krantz.
Kind of.
With the soundtrack.
So, yep.
You know my favorite, forget about Robin D. Williams, the guy that did Star
Wars. John Williams?
Him too.
Robin D. Williams?
Yeah.
Or John Williams.
John Williams will do. I think I'm thinking of his brother.
Yeah.
The unsuccessful.
Yeah, Mork.
Yeah, Mork. Speaking of jumpsuits. That was a terrible one. No, my favorite scores were, I forget his last name. He worked a lot in the late 60s and early 70s.
Okay.
Lalo Safran, maybe? Lalo Safran.
Okay.
He did the soundtrack to Bullet.
He did the soundtrack to
Dirty Harry.
Okay.
He did... I think it's Lalo Safarin or something like
Lalo
that.
Lalo Safarin.
Yeah, like soundtracks or something like that. And what I liked about those is they were really jazzy. They were kind of that, a lot of kind of flute, a lot of jazz.
Lalo Schifrin.
Schifrin. Okay.
Yeah, so he did, you're right, Bullet, Enter the Dragon.
I didn't know he did Enter the Dragon.
The theme from Mission Impossible.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, that guy was great. And I think it's because, you and I are enjoying Krantz, and it has that 60s sound.
Yes.
And I think Lalo had that late 60s, early 70s sound that
I really liked.
It's kind of that kind of fusion type
Along
stuff.
That same lines, but who I also liked is Ennio Morricone, who did all the Westerns.
Oh, yes.
Right,
yes,
you know,
yes,
so,
yes,
I mean,
yes.
Still from the 60s, but he did other non-Western stuff, and it still has that same sort of light, airy kind of,
So what if he had done, like, Once Upon a Time in the West?
Yeah, all those.
Good, bad, and the ugly, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. So that's good.
So anyway, so Black Panther won 3 Academy Awards, and this is the first time any Marvel movie has won an Academy Award. So
that's surprising.
Yeah.
To me.
So great news for Marvel.
Like never. Nothing.
Nope,
ever.
No. Not that. In my research.
Like best grip.
Well, okay. I don't know about technical awards,
okay.
But the in the major competitive academy
right. award on award night, not the afternoon where the week before, awards, right?
Because it didn't even win special effects, right? Usually something you could see how a movie like that would win best special effects, but it didn't, you know. So
fantastic. Well, hey, you know what? I mean, that's progress, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Which I think segues nicely into the talk about Captain Marvel.
So Captain Marvel is coming out on March the 8th.
March the 8th. That's like
so
2 weekends.
Not this Friday, but next Friday.
Yeah, now, 1 weekend from now. What am I talking about?
Not even. So that's coming out soon.
Now, what were you telling me last week? And Dylan upstairs was telling me earlier that Rotten Tomatoes has had to change.
Yeah, so basically.
So what they're getting is basically just haters.
Right.
Dissing on it, even if they didn't see it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
They're not a fan of the actress.
Right.
And so they're panning it.
Yep.
Just to give it a low Rotten Tomatoes score.
They're either panning it because they're not a fan of the actress, or they're panning it because it's a movie that has a female lead, or they're panning it because maybe they just don't like Marvel. For whatever reason they have, they're giving it a bad score, even though there's no reason to, because it hasn't even come out yet.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So they're giving it a bad score. So now Rotten Tomatoes, I think just either yesterday or today, I don't really remember, could have been Monday even, has gone and changed the settings so that people can no longer do that.
Right.
So they've had to go, and this is sort of unheard of for, you know, a major internet site like Rotten Tomatoes is for Hollywood and for movies, to go ahead and actually change their dynamics to be able to not be able to pan a movie like that.
Well, that means, I think that means the power of Rotten Tomatoes is there to actually cost studio money.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, they say that, you know, that's one of the reasons why Solo didn't do as well as it should have.
Because of Rotten Tomatoes.
Because of Rotten Tomatoes, yeah. So there's other movies that have not done as well. And basically, here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
From what I've read now, and don't get me wrong, I have not read a whole lot on this, but from what I've read, basically they're saying it's, you know, all these disgruntled fans who either don't like a particular actor or a particular director or, you know, the way a series is going, and they bomb it for, you know, weeks on end, and eventually get so that the scores get so low that, you know, people do go to that site, and you know, once the movie opens up, you know, it's not starting with 100% and going lower. It's starting at like 20% and trying to get up higher. But people are looking at that 20% saying, well, even though it opened today,
not that good.
Must not be
Why
very
would
good.
I go waste my money on that?
Right.
So
I'd rather go see Leonard Part 6 or something like that. Yeah. Mm. You know, so,
So when it comes out, is there like, Do you have to go home and register onto Rotten Tomatoes or on your phone or whatever it is?
I don't know enough about it. I do go to the site once in a while, but I believe you do have to register enter your comment. But basically, as long as you have an email, you can register, right? So you can even create multiple email addresses and go ahead and register and apply your vote, kind of thing.
Well, yeah, the problem with that is it's twofold, right? One is you're at the whim as fans. We can actually be affected by just some sort of malicious movement, you know, kind of to undermine something.
Right.
Because we don't want to waste our time, right?
Right.
We don't want to waste our time and we don't want to waste our money.
Right, right? Exactly.
But by listening to this type of thing, we could be cheating ourselves of a great experience, though.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So it's odd that kind of the dynamic of a Rotten Tomatoes type of website has painted this predicament for a movie house.
Well, okay. So here, I'm going to read you their official comment here.
Okay.
We are disabling the comment function prior to a movie's release date. Unfortunately, we've seen an uptick in non-constructive input, sometimes bordering on trolling, which we believe is a disservice to our general readership. We've decided that turning off this feature for now is the best course of action. Once a movie is released, audiences can still leave a user rating and comments as they always have. So basically they're saying, you know, they're going to wait till the movie comes out and let people actually, you know, give a proper rating. Now, that's not to say that those same people aren't going to go back and do the same thing again.
Right.
But it's also going to allow people who actually get a chance to see the movie to make a comment as well.
Right. Awesome. All right. Well, I for one, am looking forward to it. I've seen both trailers.
Yep. Yep.
I only know of two.
I believe there's only two. Right. I could be wrong.
The one where she lands in the Blockbuster, and then I forget what the other one was.
Yeah,
the other
one was just a montage.
Yeah, and I liked both. They both looked intriguing. Yep. She looks great in the part. And,
yep.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to the movie a lot.
Me too.
I hope it's a good setup. It gives enough stuff toward the Marvel movie as well. I mean, it has to be a setup because it's happened so far back, but right. Anyway, it's got the juices flowing. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, so good. That's going to come out March the 8th, and then I think it's only like, you know, basically the middle or end of April that Avengers Endgames comes out. So it's not very long after that.
Yeah, like 8 weeks.
Yeah, not even probably.
Yeah, 7 weeks or something like that.
So lots of stuff going on there with Captain Marvel. So again, congratulations to Black Panther, and we're looking forward to Captain Marvel.
Hey, listen, Chris, right after, the week after the Captain Marvel movie opens, is the Toronto March Comic Con, Toronto Comic Con.
Right.
Which kind of in our neck of the woods up here in Canada.
Yep.
Southern Ontario.
It's kind of a big one.
Yeah, that's kind of like the launch of the con season.
Right.
Of the big con season.
Yep.
I know internationally, especially south of the border, the first big one of the year, I think the first big one is coming up as well. That's the C2E2.
C2E2, right? Yeah. And that's in March, right?
That's in March, I think, as well. Yep. And those kind of were traditionally the two big. Well, right. C2E2 is bigger, but up here, the Toronto one and the C2E2 one. I'm just wondering, I mean, you and I have been to so many shows over the years.
So many,
And I wanted to reflect. I wanted your reflection more than anything else on how much they've changed and what you're looking for in this year's shows.
Well, okay, so there's a couple different questions there. First one is... you know, how have they changed? Well, you and I have been to so many shows that when we were going to a lot of these shows, they were hotel convention cons.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a relatively small room.
90% comic books.
You know, 90% comic books.
Yeah.
Maybe the odd time there might be an artist, but not very often.
Yeah.
You know, we would go to those cons and just be digging for books.
Yep.
Then they got a little bit bigger. I remember going to a show at the Ontario College of Art that Todd McFarlane was at.
That's right.
You know, there was a bunch of people there. So that was a bit bigger at that one. And then, you know, then they started getting bigger and bigger after that with starting the Toronto, like not the Toronto Comic Con, but like the Fan Expo.
Amon.
Yeah. He started doing that show. Of course, it wasn't Fan Expo then,
right?
But he started doing those shows, and they just got bigger and bigger.
They were up at the convention center, up at the Front Street atrium there. They were really good.
They're always good. They're always good.
They outgrew it, and they went to the south, and then they took over both north and south buildings.
So, you know, I think the only issue that I've ever had with them that more recently is that there's not enough comic dealers, right? It's become so big though now that it's cost prohibitive for a store to even go ahead and open up a booth there, because you know, so you look at the number of stores that are in the general GTA, Hamilton, Southern Ontario area, and not every store gets a booth there because it's so much money.
Right. I mean, take a microcosm, say the Niagara Comic Con, which we do as well.
Yep.
And we know some local shops that will set up at the Niagara Comic Con.
Right.
You know, that's, or the Hamilton Comic Con.
Yeah, yeah.
And some local shops that will set up at the Hamilton Comic Con. Because even those things, the tickets are expensive, but they're manageable.
Right.
Whereas, man, you know, well, I've often equated it, you cannot do the Fan Expo or a big show, let's say like New York.
Yeah.
Or never mind San Diego for anybody out east, right?
Yeah.
But you cannot do those shows without pretty well taking a table cost and then timesing it by three.
Right.
For your cost.
Sure.
Right? Because you might have to stay in hotels.
Yeah.
You might have to bring staffing.
Van
rentals and eating and all that kind of stuff. And it becomes really, really... And to your case in point, it robs... I'm going to tell you what it robs a comic show of.
Tell me.
Okay? It robs a comic show of, except for our booth, of course. It robs a comic show of a cheap source of comics, quality comics,
yep,
for the attendees.
Well, yeah. So, like, for example, let's say I decided that I want to set up shop myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, it'd be hard for me to get a table.
Right.
Second of all, what does it cost? Like, I think it's like, what, $2,000 for the table for the weekend?
It's ridiculous.
You know?
Yeah.
So to spend that kind of money, I don't know if that's what it is, but to spend, it's lots of money. It's in the thousands.
Mm-hmm.
To spend that kind of money over a weekend to try to recoup that, you know, you have to make sure you're selling stuff at a really good price or you have stuff people want.
Right. Right. Well, what those smaller shows, too, you used to have the guys or the gals that were selling out.
Right.
And that would always be a good source. When you don't have to restock, you can sell your stuff cheaper.
Sure.
Right. But there's none of those people at these big shows because the big shows are so expensive. So what you have at these big shows is the corporate type dealers that have to reinvest those monies into more books and better books.
Right.
So they're basically trying to get top market plus 5%.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Or whatever. So they're selling the hottest of the hot at that day. And they may discount some stuff that they may have had for a year or two just to move and stuff.
Yep.
But it's really, really tough dislodging a deal at a comic shop. Whereas I remember in the old days when you used to go to these smaller town, I remember Utica, New York.
Yeah, or Syracuse.
Syracuse. There's the Mid-Ohio Con in Columbus. Remember that?
Even the Motor City Con.
Motor City Con.
Yep.
These were cons that didn't cost so much to set up. And my sense was that there were deals there.
Sure.
There were always dealers there that could afford setting up that maybe were you know, basement guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, really reasonable because they're not looking to replenish.
No.
They're just happy to get what they get.
Remember,
you can't do that at Fan Expo. You can't do that at New York. You can't do that at C2E2.
No.
You can't do that.
We were talking earlier on last fall about replacement cost.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, if you're a store and your livelihood is old books, well, you know, you got to keep on buying old books. Well, it's harder and harder to get those old books all the time, so
yep.
You got to pay more to get the good stuff.
Yep.
So what's the bottom line here, Walt? Is the bottom line, you know, okay, well, first of all, before I ask that, what are some of your thoughts about the old shows from back then, and just like you asked me, old shows from back then, the big changes to the new shows now?
Yeah, it's becoming a multimedia event as before it was a niche comic event.
Right.
And it never happened overnight. There may have been a few years where it accelerated, but it was a slow transition at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then there was a few middle years in there that really kind of you could see taken over.
Yeah, yeah.
And then now it's come to fruition that, you know, you may have at an event like Fan Expo, you may have, you know, out of 600 dealers, you may have 9 quality comic dealers.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it is what it is now, but people do go for the multimedia event now. And it's even harder for one of those 9 dealers is you're going, man, it's one of those things, right? It's like, oh my goodness, look at this lake has 1 million fish in it, but none of them are biting.
Yeah.
All right. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where it's like the eyes deceive you. You see all these people.
Yeah.
But there's very little people interested in what you have to sell.
And that's if you want to say that there's a problem with Fan Expo,
mm-hmm.
You could say that one of the problems is that a lot of people go for the spectacle.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yes.
Not so great for the dealers. But it is a spectacle, and there's lots to see. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I would certainly never tell people not to go because I think everybody should experience it multiple times.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? But I'm going to close the discussion off with being the grown-up.
Yep.
And say that, hey, as a vendor at the Fan Expo, as a return vendor that's been there many, many years, if I don't have a good show, I consider it my fault.
Right.
You know, I have a general idea and knowledge of the mix of people coming. I have a shop that has multiple lines and kind of collecting strains,
yep,
and product lines and all that stuff. You got to be creative. You got to take a pulse of the market.
Yep.
And you got to bring what people will buy, what you think people will buy. And hopefully, if you just depend on that one thing and times around you are changing, but you're not changing, you in trouble.
And you need to start having more people cosplaying.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Because that certainly is the big thing these days as well. But anyways, all right, let's have a quick musical interlude. Then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about what's going on in the comic book industry. But first, a little bit more of that Spider-Man Krantz.
Stuff, Chris. Wonderful stuff. Listen, the industry news part deux is brought to us by another repeat sponsor, Stella Artois Club Soda.
They're a good sponsor.
Oh, Stella Artois has been making club soda for what seems like millennia.
It seems,
but
like
it was closer to 800 years.
Well, it's still a long time.
So, if anybody can perfect the bubbly of the club soda.
Yes.
It's Stella.
I agree. I totally agree.
Chris, what I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, we were talking about Captain Marvel.
Yes.
And we were talking about how some of the reasons why people were giving it a bad review, you know, partially because they didn't like the fact that Captain Marvel maybe switched to being a female character stuff. So I wanted to go through a quick exercise here, and I just came to me right now, so I don't even know where this is going to lead.
But
I got a pencil and a pen in hand.
Okay.
And I want you and me to name, in our mind, the top 10 male superheroes in terms of just cultural significance.
Okay, top 10.
Okay, go ahead.
So wait, am I going to name them?
Because the first few will be the same.
Okay, so Superman.
Batman.
Spider-Man. Incredible Hulk. Captain America.
Cap.
I think he's up there now. Maybe not so much years ago, but
Iron Man, would you put up there?
Now I would, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
We can't do Wonder Woman. She's not.
How many is that? Five, six?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now we've got two. Would you include Aquaman in there? No, I wouldn't. Lantern or the Flash?
You know, it always gets dicey around those guys because Green Lantern, Flash, Aquaman. I would say they're the next three, like the next big ones.
I would put Green Lantern and the Flash ahead of Aquaman.
Flash for sure.
Wolverine,
mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes, absolutely. Wolverine, we were neglecting him.
Now you wouldn't put say Deadpool in there, would you?
No. I wouldn't. Maybe somebody else would. What about Thor?
Maybe Thor. We're old traditionalists. Thor. So that's 9.
Yeah.
You're probably forgetting somebody really obvious, like maybe Shazam. No.
Well, I don't think. So, what was your original question? Cultural
weight significance.
Yeah. No.
Comic book history significance.
Okay.
Cultural history significance. You know, Green Lantern. I think might be. We'll just put Flash in there.
Okay.
So we got Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Hulk, Captain America, Iron Man, Flash, Wolverine, Thor.
I think Aquaman has to go in there. The success of the movie, it had a cartoon for a long time. I would say it has to be. I personally would say it has to go in there. Now, what, like,
I put Ant-Man in there after.
What about
X-Men? No.
That's a team.
That's a team. That's no good.
No.
But we can't even get 10.
Well, there's lots of minor ones, right?
But it shouldn't be minor. At 10, it should not be minor.
Well, minor to us, right?
Green Lantern isn't minor to us.
No. Okay, we'll put Green Lantern down. Okay, Green Lantern.
Okay, Green Lantern. Now, I wanted to do the 10 top female.
Right.
Culturally, historically significant.
Yep.
The way we've been doing with the guys, is maybe it might be easier on the girl side.
Okay.
So, well, I think number one has to be Wonder Woman.
Yeah, 100%.
Number one has to be Wonder Woman.
Yeah, Wonder Woman.
Okay, Wonder Woman. Number two would be what?
Okay.
Not number two. We're not going to go in order. We're just going to go the top 10.
Okay.
It doesn't matter what order we put them in.
Okay, so.
These are historically important characters. And I want to go heroes, not villains.
Okay, yeah.
So we're not going to do, let's say, Catwoman.
Right, okay.
But would you put Black Widow in there?
Well, I think I want to back up for a second. I think Catwoman, Catwoman had her own series, and she was actually like an anti-hero for a while. Would you not put her in there?
All right, we'll put Catwoman.
Put Catwoman in there.
Catwoman. Then you got to put Harley Quinn in there.
I think she should be in there.
All right. And you think they're both deserving of top 10?
Yep.
All right, Catwoman.
Yep.
Harley Quinn. Wonder Woman.
Yep.
Black Widow?
Yeah, Black Widow.
Black Widow.
Jean Grey.
You think Jean Grey?
I think so.
Jean Grey is kind of like, she had that 15, 20 year period.
That's a long time, no? What about
Jean Grey ahead of Storm?
I think so. I don't think Storm has the weight that she used to have.
How about somebody like She-Hulk?
No, I don't think so.
Squirrel Girl?
Maybe. I think maybe nowadays more so than She-Hulk.
Okay, Wonder Woman, Black Widow, Catwoman.
Ms. Marvel.
Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel.
Well, Captain Marvel, and I would say Ms. Marvel, the new Ms. Marvel. No?
Oh, like Kamala Khan?
Yeah.
Okay, Ms. Marvel.
Okay.
She's too new.
Is she, though? But doesn't she have a... Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe not Kamala Khan.
Well, how about like old standbys like Wasp or Black Canary or hey, Elektra.
Elektra, it would be a good one.
Uh-huh.
Wasp, I think it would be a good one.
Wasp, yeah.
I would love to say Zatanna or Power Girl,
uh-huh.
But I don't think they have the cultural significance that...
How about Supergirl?
Yes, absolutely. 100% Supergirl.
Supergirl. So not She-Hulk. How about somebody like a Jessica Jones?
No, not Jessica Jones. No, no. Supergirl, I think, is a perfect one.
Right. We got 9.
In fact, I'd say she's number 2. If Wonder Woman was number 1. Wonder
right.
Now, here's what I'm going to ask you.
Go ahead.
What about like a Lois Lane?
Yeah, no, they're supporting characters.
Not a hero enough?
No, you can't. Yeah, they're supporting characters. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, you got Black X-23, Storm, maybe.
Is Storm even around anymore? Like,
so Jean Grey would be the
top 10? I would say
10?
Jean Grey.
Yeah, Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question then. What was harder? I mean, it took us about the same time for both lists. What was harder to make?
I think, well...
They were both roughly the same.
They're both roughly the same. But had we done this exercise 10 years ago, uh-huh. I think making the list of women... heroes would have been a lot harder.
Right. Now, of these female characters,
yep.
The only one I really kind of don't like, honestly, I don't like, is Supergirl.
You're crazy.
No, but I tell you why. Because Wonder Woman is a creation unto itself.
Yeah.
Black Widow is too. Elektra is too. Supergirl was the girlified version of the boy hero.
Okay, but...
That's what I didn't like
But she
it.
Had enough cultural significance
right.
to have her own comic.
You're
she had
right.
her own movie. She has
You're
her own
right.
TV series right now.
Yep.
Like, there's enough of her. Although, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
That
now, has there ever been...
Yeah.
...a male hero based on the female derivative?
Not... Yeah, I was actually just thinking about that, and yeah. I can't think of any. They've played on the words a little bit. Like, you know, they made a Wonder Man. Marvel made a Wonder Man. And,
right.
And, you know, DC made a Power Girl as opposed to Power Man. But they're
right.
not.
But it wasn't like Supergirl is Superman, but a girl.
Right.
So I'm talking about just that is the same character, but male.
So
I can't think of one either.
No, like, I don't think they've ever made like an. Well, they've made. Okay, Mary Marvel. Mary Marvel. No, that's the other way around.
Yeah,
right.
That's the other way around. I'm talking about the
other way around. You're right. Yeah. Hold on. I was going to say, like, Aqualas. I think there was at one point, but I don't think, like...
Yeah.
It's not really...
Hey, you know, we didn't include Robin. Yeah, but he doesn't.
Yeah, I don't think he... No. Yeah, I don't think there's been a female character that's been created that they've then created a male counterpart to.
Right. And if anybody knows it, please write in the comments.
I would love to know that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like, I don't know.
There's a Catwoman, but no Catman. But, right. Well, there is a Catman.
Well, there was a Catman, but that was an original. Nothing to do with each other. Yeah. Nothing to do with each other. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
And it's funny how the Wasp.
Yep.
Worked,
yep.
But there's no, like, B-Man, you know what I mean? Or,
because there was already an Ant-Man.
Yeah, but what's that matter?
Well, I'm just saying.
What's that matter?
Okay, but...
There's the Blue Beetle, for cripe's sakes. When you think about...
But there was
the most lovable insect in the world is the bee.
Right.
Forget about a spider. Everybody hates those things. Or an ant.
Yeah.
They're pests.
I'm just saying that...
Bees are cool. How did they not make a great bee character?
I think
I'm a great B character.
I think you are a great B character. I think this show is a great B program.
More like a C program. Anyway.
I think you're right. I think it's a great exercise, and I think it tells a lot about society.
Yes. Yes, right? It does.
And how we need to have more great female heroes.
Well, I think we got tons now, and I love it. And because they're great. Like, who doesn't love Wonder Woman? Right.
Yeah.
And how many of these? Okay. Here's another dumb chauvinistic male question: Is how many of these were produced in the postmodern feminism era, where the character wasn't a tripe or Wonder Woman was the secretary to the general, what I'm saying, or Power Girl was just, you know, big boobs, and that was the whole shtick.
Yeah,
it was, you know, Kamala Khan maybe would be one definitely. Yep. It's more about the character itself opposed to it being a sexist character.
Well, Captain Marvel, who was Ms. Marvel
for sure,
right?
Squirrel Girl would have to be one for sure.
See, I think although we laugh, I think Squirrel Girl is a significant character nowadays.
Yeah, Elektra would be one for sure as well. Elektra, very strong.
Black Widow.
Yeah, Black Widow. Yeah, you're right. Black Widow. Yeah, definitely Black Widow. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So I think there's lots out there. I don't think it's not as many as we would like, because, you know, it's not as a lot of those newer characters were made post that sort of Lois Lane as a victim all the time.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, yeah,
so we're not getting that as much as we used to.
Right. Right. All right, Chris. So anyway, I thought
good
that
exercise,
would be
very interesting exercise. Yeah.
All right. Listen, we don't have much time left.
Of your favorites, who is your favorite of those two of those two groups?
I don't know. I grew up reading flipping, you know, predominantly boy superheroes.
Yeah.
Batman and Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, one of each.
Okay. I like Black Widow.
Yep.
And Spidey.
Nice. Yep. Nice.
Okay. How about you?
Captain America and Power Girl.
There you go. There you go. Captain America and Power Girl. All right, Chris, we don't have much time left. I really wanted to review some positive news in the industry, and that was that January comic sales at your local comic book shop were up.
Nice.
They were up over January of last year by a nice little solid 14.33%.
Nice. Well, actually, the first time I hear that they're actually up was 4 years ago.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
the first January increase since 2015, which is really nice. Marvel is dominating the industry at 39.25% of the industry, and DC's at 29.7%.
Yeah.
You know what's disappointing to me? I looked at these numbers, and correct me if I'm wrong.
I will.
Thank you. Did they drop the ball? How is it that Archie is 10th place as a publisher behind things like Dynamite and Titan and Viz and Boom?
I don't know if there's so much as dropping the ball or people are just becoming more interested in the other ones. Because is there really much more that Archie can do? Archie comes and goes. Archie has...
But Archie had so much inertia and momentum, say, 5 years ago. When when they came out with issue 600, where you had the marrying thing, and then the afterlife thing, and then the whole... It seemed like the whole Archie universe was reinvigorated.
You're right.
And it's like, okay, then the TV shows were coming out, and they were met with success. And it's like, and then they tried other things, and they...
Maybe you're right. Maybe they're dropping the ball.
And then I look at this and I go, well, 0.78% of the market is Archie. It's like, well, like, okay, how did they lose steam?
But you know what? So I watched the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I think it's a great show.
Yeah.
I do buy the Sabrina comic, but it's infrequent.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't buy the other Archie comics. So you know what? I don't... you know, I think I'm that 0.78% because I like the show, I like the comic, but there's not enough of it.
Right.
So maybe you're right. Maybe they are dropping the ball. Yeah. Right. You know, I don't buy the other Archie comics. I don't. You know, I don't really get into it that much. But
right, I see Image contracted a bit. They were tickling 10% for a while there when you and I were doing these last year.
Yep.
And they're down now back to 7.5. I think that whole there was that era, Chris, of Image. I would call it maybe starting about 8, 9 years ago, 10 years ago, where Image was banking on. Image was like a 1990s Valiant company.
Yeah. Really.
It was any new number one was guaranteed 100,000 sales almost, or 50,000 sales, just based on spec.
Mm-hmm.
Speculators were picking up Deadly Class or Chew or whatever the heck it was, based on how well Walking Dead
and Saga.
Saga, yeah. Right? Saga was actually in the spec era, just at the beginning of it, right? Mm-hmm. Successful spec.
Yeah.
But it seemed like that whole exercise has waned a little bit too.
Well,
the guy's buying.
The problem is, if you look at the Diamond Previews, you look at the Image section, there are a lot of number ones. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like they're still trying that, but nothing. It's almost like, well, I can't afford to buy every single one number one that they put out.
Well, no, I don't think it's them not putting them out.
Well, they're paying too money.
I think it's the guys like you and me and the backpack speculators have kind of walked away from that exercise.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Let's guess which Image is the next whatever.
They're putting out too many, so therefore I don't want to buy any of them.
Right.
Now, right.
Yeah. So, I don't know where to guess.
Yeah.
It takes way too much homework to read about everything here and figure out which one might be the hit.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, which is good in a sense, because that's what happened in the 90s, where there's sort of a bit of a crash.
Yeah.
And so what's going to happen from that is you're only going to get the really good stuff surviving.
Right.
Right. So, you know, no longer, instead of having, you know, 50 number ones come out a month, you'll have, you know, 10 strong books that are still going to go. Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's what helps build a good clientele.
Remember that was a couple of years ago, Seven to Eternity or something like
that. Yeah. Yeah.
That thing was worth $150 at a 9.8. Now I don't know if it's worth whatever.
20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's a tough game. But hey, the number one book of the month was Batman Who Laughs, number two.
Yep.
And the number two book was Captain Marvel number one.
Yep.
And I liked seeing the number four book cracking 100,000 units.
Yeah.
Conan the Barbarian number one from Marvel.
Sold out.
Yeah.
Sold out.
Fantastic. So, anyway, positive news from your local comic book shop. And we, have you guys listening to thank, cause you guys are going in frequenting your local comic book shop and supporting them. And we appreciate that here at the show. Speaking of show.
We're out of time.
We're out of deluge.
You're going to deluge because we're out of time.
We're out of time. Comic Culture produced and directed and whatever else by Chris Owen. And we're at 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station, thanks to us.
Thanks to us.
And podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. And please keep going out and supporting your local comic book shop.
And have yourself a great day.